last lesson, just a reminder of where we have been and what we're doing in this, we're looking at faith warriors. And in order for us to really understand what faith warriors are all about, we have to understand the definition of faith. So we started out in Hebrews 11 and verse 1, where the writer there gives us a definition of what faith is. And it is a working definition, okay? Because faith really is about working and doing what God calls upon us to do. So he says faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we have not or do not see. We are sure and we are certain. Those are the two key words in faith. I haven't seen it, I haven't received it yet, but I know without a doubt that it is there for me. That is faith, okay? We've been saying all along that what does this faith really do for us? This kind of faith, not just a I believe in God kind of a faith, but having a faith that is sure and that is certain, and being a faith warrior, what does that do for us, okay? It motivates us, all right? It helps us in moving us to obey what God tells us to do. And in all of these examples of faith that we've been looking at, one thing for sure that we have seen is that these people have been obedient to what God has given them to do. And so this kind of faith moves us to obey what God tells us, all right? It also gets us through the difficulties in life. And certainly with several of these examples that we've looked at, we've seen where they face some pretty bad difficulties in their lives. And yet we see that their faith got them through even the fiery furnace. So that kind of faith gets us through the difficulties. And then also, that kind of faith propels us to the victory that God has promised us. And that's really, if you think about it, that's the foundation of the faith. What is it that we are believing in or have that faith in? It is the victory that God has promised us in Christ Jesus. All right? Now, we have been looking in this whole study. We started out with looking at the who's who of the faithful that the writer of Hebrews talks about in chapter 11. And they are, as I've mentioned this morning, they're examples of real people who lived out their faith in obedience to God. They are people who submitted themselves to what God had in store for them, what God's will was for their lives, and they and it also shows us how God used them to complete or fulfill His purpose for them. And that's what we want to be doing in our lives, to be faith warriors that will live in obedience to God and that will allow God to fulfill His purpose for us in His world. Okay? In doing so, we've been asking two questions. First of all, let's look at what did this person do that really makes them a faith warrior? And then secondly, what can I learn from their example? Okay, so this morning in this final lesson, we're going to be looking at Elijah. Okay, the prophet Elijah, very fascinating man, a tremendous, tremendous faith warrior. So we begin this morning in talking about as evil as it gets. Okay? As evil as it gets. Now, we go back in the Old Testament into the book of Kings, 1 Kings, and what we see there is that when Solomon, who was the king of Israel, Solomon was David's son, when he died, the kingdom was divided in two. His son Rehoboam rejected the counsel of the wise men that his father had to go easy on the people and to treat them kindly and fairly. Instead, he took the advice of the younger men and said he was going to treat them harshly. Well, guess what happened? They rebelled. And the kingdom was divided in two. A man by the name of Jeroboam and his followers broke off from Israel, from the kingdom of Israel and formed the northern kingdom of Israel. And then there was the southern kingdom of Judah under Rehoboam. That's how the kingdom became divided. Now what happened is Jeroboam, because he wanted to keep the people in the northern kingdom, he wanted to keep them there, He set up two altars, one in Bethel and one in Dan. Okay? And he did that so that the people wouldn't go back to Jerusalem to the temple to worship. Right? And here's what he said. 1 Kings chapter 12. After seeking advice, the king made two golden calves. Is there a problem with that? Yeah, big time. Okay? And he said to the people, "It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Here are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt. One he has set up in Bethel and the other in Dan." And this thing became a sin. The people went even as far as Dan to worship the one there. So Jeroboam sets up these temples, these altars, and puts golden calves on them for the people to worship, and says, "These are your gods, and not only are they your gods, but they're the ones who brought you out of Egypt." Yeah, that golden calf, similar to the one most likely that Aaron had made in the wilderness. Didn't work very well for them then either, did it? But here's what happened. This really starts taking the Israelite people on a path farther and farther away from worshiping God. And what we see, and I know that y'all can see this really clearly up there, but just bear with me. Basically a succession of kings in what is known as the divided kingdom. And we're going to focus on the first few here. And I want you to notice with me, what does the Bible say about these various kings of the northern kingdom of Israel? Okay? Nadab, son of Jeroboam. So Jeroboam dies and Nadab, his son, becomes king of Israel in the second year of Asa. Asa was the king in Judah. Okay? And he reigned over Israel 2 years. And look at the next statement. It says, "He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, following the ways of his father and committing the same sin his father had caused Israel to commit." Okay? Then comes along, in the third year of Asa, the king of Judah, Baasha, son of Ahijah, became the king of all Israel in Tirzah. And he reigned 24 years. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, following the ways of Jeroboam and committing the same sin Jeroboam had caused Israel to commit. Zimri destroyed the whole family of Baasha in accordance with the word of the Lord spoken against Baasha through the prophet Jehu. Because of all the sins Baasha and his son Elah had committed and had caused Israel to commit, so that they aroused the anger of the Lord, the God of Israel, by their worthless idols. Zimri. When Zimri saw that the city was taken, he went into the citadel of the royal palace and set the palace on fire. So he died because of the sins he had committed, doing evil in the eyes of the Lord and following the ways of Jeroboam, and to committing the same sin Jeroboam had caused Israel to commit. So you see a pattern here? One after another. And they're following the sins of Jeroboam. Okay? Omri did evil in the eyes of the Lord, and look at this next statement, and sinned more than all those before him. So it's getting worse. Okay? It's getting worse. He followed completely the ways of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, committing the same sin Jeroboam had caused Israel to commit, so that they aroused the anger of the Lord, the God of Israel, by their worthless idols. So what we have is six kings up to this point in Israel, each doing evil in the eyes of the Lord, each doing even more than what Jeroboam had done, and leading the people of Israel, the northern kingdom, astray. As if that wasn't bad enough. Remember, the part of the heading of this part of our study is "As Evil as It Gets," right? Okay, then there's Ahab. So you have all these kings, and then there's Ahab. And here's what it says about Ahab. In the 38th year of Asa, king of Judah, Ahab, son of Omri, became king of Israel, and he reigned in Samaria over Israel 22 years. Ahab, son of Omri, did more evil in the eyes of the Lord than any of those before him. Okay? He did more evil than any of the kings that had preceded him. He not only considered it trivial to commit the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, but he also married Jezebel. Okay, we'll talk about more about that in just a second. He also married Jezebel, daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and began to serve Baal and worship him. He set up an altar for Baal in the temple of Baal that he had built in Samaria. Ahab also made an Asherah pole and did more to arouse the anger of the Lord, the God of Israel, than did all of the kings of Israel before him. Okay? So Ahab was about, in the kings that were over Israel, he was about as bad as it got. And not only that, was he bad enough, but he married Jezebel. Okay? Now, in the book of Revelation, okay, the Lord says this about the church in Thyatira. He comments about some good things that they're doing. Then he says, "Nevertheless, I have this against you. You tolerate that woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophet. By her teaching, she misleads my servants into sexual immorality and the eating of food sacrificed to idols." So Jezebel, her name became synonymous with evil. That's how bad her and Ahab were. They were a pair, okay? That basically everything they did, practically, at least what's recorded in the scriptures, was just evil. Okay? And that is the time frame that Elijah was prophesying for the Lord in the midst of Ahab and Jezebel doing all the evil that they came up with. All right? And we look at Elijah, the next thing we want to focus on, if you understand the setting, so to speak, that Elijah was prophesying in, this time of tremendous evil amongst the people of Israel, we have what I'm just referring to as the Mount Carmel Challenge, okay, or the Battle of the Gods. What happens is that Elijah by this time has become a wanted man. What happened is that he told Ahab that it was not going to rain until he said it was going to rain. And ended up being a severe famine in the land. This went on for 3.5 years. And that's what James is referring to in the text that we read a few moments ago. Okay? And so because of this famine and the hardship of the people, Ahab basically wanted to kill Elijah. And so he was a wanted man. Here's what James wrote, just to remind you. Elijah was a man with a nature like ours, or he was human like us. And he prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it did not rain on the land for 3 years and 6 months. And he prayed again, and the heavens gave rain, and the earth produced its fruit. So Elijah, because God used him in this way, he did that according to God's instructions, he became a wanted man. During this time, Jezebel, okay, was doing a bunch of her evil, wicked work. She worshipped Baal and Asherah. Baal was the god of fertility, and also, you notice on here, the Lord of the rain clouds. And so Elijah, keeping it from raining through God's power, was basically showing God's power over this god that they were claiming, who was Lord of the rain clouds. He was powerless to do anything to bring any rain. Well, Jezebel was not happy with what was going on, and she was killing off any and all prophets of the Lord that she could find. Now, there was a fellow who was by the name of Obadiah, who actually was an assistant to the King Ahab, but he was working for the Lord, and he took 100 of the prophets of the Lord and he hid them away so that Jezebel could not keep, could not kill them. So all of this is going on in this time period while this famine is happening, this drought that's going on. Jezebel is wreaking havoc with God's people and turning people away and killing God's prophets. Comes time for basically the battle to take place. The Lord sends Elijah to Ahab. And he does it through Obadiah, by the way. And Obadiah, when he sends a message, he sees him and he says, go and tell Ahab I'm coming. And Obadiah's going, well, wait a minute. You know, the king wants to kill you. And if I go and I tell him that I found you and so forth, and he comes here and you're not here, he'll kill me. Elijah said, don't worry about it. I'm going to see him. That's my paraphrase, by the way, okay? So we have this confrontation that is going to take place because the Lord, through Elijah, he says to him that after many days, the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year saying, go, show thyself unto Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth. The place where this takes place is at Mount Carmel. Now, as the graphic on here shows, Mount Carmel is basically the place where Baal is, which is the primary place to worship Baal. Okay? So Jezebel and Ahab and all of Jezebel's prophets, and there were 850 of them, by the way, they had home court advantage, if you will, over Elijah. This was their worship ground, if you will. And so Elijah tells Ahab, okay, send and gather to me all Israel unto Mount Carmel. The prophets of Baal, 450, and the prophets of the groves, 400, which eat at Jezebel's table. So Ahab sent unto all the children of Israel and gathered the prophets together unto Mount Carmel. So here's where the battle is going to take place. The battle of the gods. All right? Elijah tells the prophets and Ahab and the rest of them, he says, get two oxen and let them, that is the prophets of Baal, have one and fix it and prepare it, put it on the altar, but don't put any fire on it. And I'm going to take the other one and do the same thing. And I won't put any fire on it either. So, the prophets of Baal go first. They set up their altar. They put their oxen on there, the wood and so forth. And they begin dancing around the altar and chanting and calling upon Baal to light the sacrifice, to burn it up. And this starts out in the morning and it goes all the way to the evening sacrifice time. And here's what it says. They called on Baal from morning to the evening sacrifice, but there was no response. No one answered. No one paid attention as they're calling upon Baal, their god. Now, as this is going on, Elijah begins to taunt them, the prophets of Baal. And he says, shout louder, surely he's a god, isn't he? And he says, maybe he's busy, or maybe he's traveling somewhere, or perhaps he's sleeping. You say, so he's taunting these prophets about their god that they have. And they become so desperate in this effort, they shout louder throughout the day, they start slashing themselves, but again, nothing. No response from Baal at all. Elijah the challenger. He says to to all the people, come here to me. They came to him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord, which was in ruins. You see, by that time, any altar that was originally set up and used to worship Jehovah God had been torn down, and altars were put up all over the country to worship Baal. Okay? And so he gathers some people together, and they repair the altar of the Lord. And he gives them this instruction. He sets up the altar, and he puts the sacrifice on there, and he tells some of them, gather some water and pour it on the sacrifice. And so they do. And he says, do it again. And so they do. And he says, do it a third time. And so they do. And there's so much water poured onto it that the water fills the trench around the base of the altar. They didn't do that, by the way, to the sacrifice of Baal and to that altar. And Elijah begins to pray. At that time of sacrifice, the prophet Elijah stepped forward and prayed, Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known today that you are God in Israel and that I am your servant and have done all these things at your command. Answer me, Lord, answer me, so these people will know that you, Lord, are God and that you are turning their hearts back again. Then the fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, and the soil, and also licked up the water in the trench. That is how complete God's response was. It didn't just burn up the sacrifice, which is what the prophets of Baal were hoping would happen to their sacrifice. It burned up everything. Everything. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and they said, the Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is the God. God had turned them back away from Baal to Him. Then Elijah said to them, seize the prophets of Baal and do not let one of them escape. So they seized them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. 850 prophets of Baal he had killed. So who won the challenge? God did, of course, didn't he? He showed who he really was. And he used Elijah and his faith in the midst of what was had to be a tremendously scary, difficult time for Elijah because Jezebel wanted his head, and guess what? It became worse after this happened because Ahab goes and reports to Jezebel what had happened and what Elijah had done, and she said, I swear that by this time tomorrow, I will kill you like you killed my prophets. She is that angry at Elijah for what he has done. No, seeing that God is that Jehovah God is really God and that Baal is nothing through what had happened, she is more determined than she was even before. And Elijah finds himself hiding for his life. A lot of other things occurred that we don't have time to go into this morning that basically leads up to the point where Ahab and Jezebel both die. And they have their reckoning with God, okay, for all the evil that they have done. But what about Elijah, okay? Well, we go over to 2 Kings and we see the story of Elijah being taken up in a whirlwind. And this is a really, I think, a very interesting story. Okay? It came to pass, and this is in chapter 2 of 2 Kings, when the Lord would take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind, that Elijah went with Elijah from Gilgal, and Elijah said to Elisha, tarry here, I pray thee, For the Lord has sent me to Bethel. And Elisha said unto him, As the Lord liveth, and as my soul liveth, I will not leave you. So they went down to Bethel. Now, when they got there, there was a company of prophets of the Lord who said to Elisha, Do you know that the Lord is going to take your master from you today? So apparently, God had revealed to these prophets of his that it was time for Elijah to be taken up to him. And so they said that to Elisha, and he says, just be quiet about it. I don't want to talk about it. And this actually happened three different times. They go on to Jericho, and Elijah tells Elisha the same thing. You stay here, the Lord has sent me on to Jericho. And he says, no, I'm going with you. Again, my paraphrase, all right? They get there, and the prophets come out and tell him the same thing. He says, yes, I know, but don't talk about it. And I get the impression from that Elisha was, you know, he knew what God had said and what he was planning, but he was sad that Elijah was going to be taken from him. So he just didn't want to talk about it. And finally they come to the Jordan River. And thereupon Elijah took his mantle, that is his cloak, and he rolled it up and he struck the water and divided into the right and left so that the two of them crossed over the Jordan on dry ground. Now, some of you may not have even realized that was in the Bible anywhere, but if we think about crossing over on dry ground, we only think of Moses and the Exodus. Okay? But that's not the only time that it happened. Here we see this happening with them. Elijah parts the waters of the Jordan, and they cross over on dry ground. By the way, they did the same thing when the Israelites came to the Jordan River to cross over into the Promised Land, right? God continues to demonstrate this power to divide the waters. And again, it's always interesting to me how it tells us that they cross over, not through slushing through the mud or anything else, but on dry ground. So he not only can part the water, but he dries up the ground underneath it. And they cross over the Jordan. And then as they're on the other side there, it was, they crossed over, that Elijah said to Elisha, Ask what I may do, may I do for you before I am taken away from you. And this statement ought to tell us something about Elisha, who was, up to that point, he was Elijah's aide, and Elijah was preparing him for this moment. And Elisha, his request, says, please let a double portion of your spirit be upon me. Wow. What a request. What a request. Which tells us, you know, what a powerful spirit Elijah had upon him. And Elisha says, I want to have even a double portion of that. And I think probably because Elisha knew what the task was that was ahead of him. And so Elijah responds to him, You have asked a hard thing. Nevertheless, if you see me when I am taken from you, it shall be so for you. But if not, it shall not be so. And as they were walking along, talking together, suddenly a chariot of fire and horses of fire appeared and separated the two of them. And Elijah went up to heaven in a whirlwind. Elisha saw this and cried out, my father, the chariots and horsemen of Israel. And Elisha saw him no more. So Elisha did get that double portion of Elijah's spirit because he saw Elijah being taken up. And I don't know if you recall or not, in one of our first studies that we had in this series, we talked about Enoch. We mentioned then about Elijah. And these are the two that the Bible speaks about, who apparently because of their walk with God did not die a physical death, but instead were blessed because of their faith to be taken up heaven to be with God. A true faith warrior. In standing up against the evil that it was in Ahab and Jezebel, standing up and confronting them, and having enough faith that God was going to take care of him, that he did not back down. And God rewarded him for his faithfulness in this way. A warrior of faith. I hope that this series of lessons that we've done, and there's 10 lessons in this series, I hope that it has challenged you to be thinking about how your faith can be stronger and challenging you to follow the example of these we've looked at so that you too can be a true faith warrior. And again, as I've said all along, this is not just a matter of having faith in God and just kind of, I believe in God that He exists, but it is allowing God to use you in whatever ways it is that He chooses to use you to accomplish His purpose in this world. We look to these examples as we have and finding how God used them and how can God use you. That's what I want you to think about. Wesley has a song that he has chosen for us to use as an invitation song. And for those of you who are here with us, if there's someone here that you have a prayer need, a request that we can answer and address for you, we want to be able to do that. Dale will be in the back to receive anyone that would like to ask him or share a prayer request, to talk with him. He'll be back there to receive anyone. Of course, I'll be up front if anyone would like to come up here. And if there's any need that we can help you with, whatever that might be, we want to do that. And for those who are here that are not yet Christians, if you desire to become a Christian and you haven't given your life to Christ, you can do that right now this morning. If you believe that Jesus is the Son of God and you're ready to make Him Lord of your life, then call upon Him as your Lord. Repent of the sin that is separating you from God and have those sins washed away in the waters of baptism. You can do that right now. All you got to do is come up and let me know. For those of you who are worshiping with us online, if you have a prayer request that you would like for us to address, then you can text Dale while we're singing this song, because Wesley's going to be leading the song, so you can text Dale and we will address your prayer request. And if there's anyone out there who is not yet a Christian, but you have come to the point that you desire to be a Christian, then you can do that as soon as possible. We will make whatever arrangements need to be to do that today if you want to do that. If you believe that Jesus is the Son of God and you're ready to make Him Lord of your life, then repent of those sins and call upon Jesus as your Lord. And let us know. You can text Dale or Wes. You can call my number. Let us know that that's your desire, and we will make it happen as soon as we can, even today. So the Lord's invitation is extended to everyone. Wesley, come on up and lead us. Let's stand together and sing.